The hour of 9 a.m. having arrived, we'll call the Tax Committee meeting to order. When we have a quorum, we're very close here. Just a couple things briefly. We do want to get right into the House file that we're looking at. It's not an official House file. It'll be introduced floor session today. We'll have it this afternoon. So we'll be working off the document that's in your folder here. First of all, just a couple quick items, housekeeping items. First of all, we have no seating arrangements. Sit where you want. You don't have to report absences if you're not going to be here, although if somebody's not here and doesn't report it, we're not counting you absent. You're going to be excused, so we don't mess with that type of stuff. And as far as the rules go, committee rules, we don't have any. Well, I guess we have one. That'd be me. Okay. So with that being said, we will get right into the item before us. And I went into a bit of a panic mode the other day when I realized that we are going to be hearing this today, and it is the Tax Committee rule, as it has been for many years, and when I chaired Ag and Commerce and all those, we always hear DFL bills first. Okay, and so I went into panic mode thinking, oh my gosh, I'm hearing my bill first, but we're not actually hearing it. It doesn't really exist. It's not an actual bill. So we will follow that tradition as always. So get your bills in, if you would, from both sides of the aisle.
I don't have a bill in my folder here.
Carlson.
Were the bills in the folder today?
Yes.
I don't have one.
Could a page get the bill to Chair Carlson, please?
Must be my newness to the committee.
You're new here. Yeah, the restrooms are right around.
Well, the first time I was on this committee was 1973. And then I took a leave of absence because it met at the same time that education did. And so I was put in a position years ago where I had to choose. But
so you were on the tax committee as a freshman?
Yes.
Boy, how times have changed.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have a quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. I'd like to welcome everyone. We will get into introductions. Some of you are new up for the Tax Committee, and we're excited to have you here. But we might not do actual introductions today because I do want to spend a little time, give you a little time. We need to get through this quickly, and I don't want to rush the introductions, and because I do want you to be able to introduce yourselves and what you're interested in on this committee. So with that, we have, of course, Nina Manzi and Joel Michael from House Research that will give an overview of the bill. And so who would like to start? Ms. Manzi, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, Nina Manzi from the House Research Department.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. The bill you have before you, which is Revisor Number 17-1286, is a bill to conform Minnesota's income, corporate franchise, and estate taxes to federal changes that have been enacted since December 31st, 2014. There are several federal laws that have been enacted since that time that affect the definition of federal taxable income and consequently affect Minnesota's income tax and corporate tax calculations. There haven't been, and I'll defer to Mr. Michael to confirm this, there haven't been any federal changes that significantly affect the calculation of our estate tax, but we typically move all of the dates in our Internal Revenue Code references in tandem so that they're all the same, whether there were any changes that affect things or not. If you turn to, you have the summary before you, if you turn to the second page of the summary, there's a listing of the significant federal laws that have been enacted. The most important of these that you should be aware of is the Protecting Americans from Tax Hikes Act of 2015, or PATH. There were a number of new provisions in that bill. There were also extensions to existing federal provisions. And finally, there were some federal provisions that previously had been what are called extenders that were made permanent. So those are all listed here, and I'll go through those in a few minutes. But I want to kind of step back and say that one of the things about this bill is that it conforms retroactively for tax year 15, which people already filed returns last year, and it will conform going forward, so for tax year 16, for which the filing season is about to start. I think the Department of Revenue is going to open the filing season on January 23rd, and then it will conform to these federal changes into the future to the extent that federal changes remain in effect. So some of the extenders were just for a couple of years, and those ones, you know, will stop at the state level and they stop at the federal level. So it's a little unusual for us to conform at this point in January of 2017 to tax year 2015. I had a conversation with Assistant Commissioner Steenblok yesterday, and she told me that, and she can answer questions on this also, but she told me that the Department of Revenue should be able to administer most of those retroactive to tax year 15 changes administratively by adjusting returns. And there are will be some returns for which they will need to send letters to taxpayers to contact them to obtain additional information about how to adjust their 2015 return. And of those ones that get letters, there'll be a small number that will have to send prepare amended returns. And she was working yesterday to try to figure out some estimates of the counts of those, and she may have those available if the committee's interested. But that's how 2015 will work under this legislation. Now, 2016, the filing season opens January 23rd, and it's my understanding that if this bill is enacted and signed by the governor quickly, that the Department of Revenue will be able to administer tax year 2016. And Commissioner Bowerly is nodding, and she could probably answer more questions to that effect. So that's where it's at as far as the sort of retroactive stuff, and then the other things will be going forward into the future. Okay, so to go back to the bill and walk through it, there are five places in the statute where there's a date reference to the Internal Revenue Code, and in all of those places, it's going to be changed from the Internal Revenue Code as amended through December 31st of 2014 to the Internal Revenue Code as amended through November 15th of 2016. And that date was picked because that was a date that was in the recent past at the time we were first drafting this legislation, and we didn't want to pick a date, you know, into the future where we didn't know if Congress was going to do something or not. So that date picks up five federal laws. So the Slain Officer Family Support Act, which is a charitable contribution item that doesn't have a large Minnesota effect, and it's something that pretty much has already happened. It allowed individual and corporate calendar year taxpayers to make charitable contributions to support the families of these two New York detectives who were killed in January through April of the year, and then to claim them for the previous year. And to the extent that Minnesota residents did that, they already did that, and they won't be going back and redoing it. Then there was another federal law that provided that there's an exclusion for federal and state benefits paid to surviving dependents of public safety officers killed in the line of duty. And that, again, has a small impact on state taxes, which I think you also have the revenue estimate in your packets and can follow along with that. So then we get to the big bill, which is the PATH Act, and it had quite a few new provisions, which are listed at the bottom of page 2 of the summary. I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you want me to go through these individually, or how do you want me to
do
it?
No, let's just kind of give a 30,000 foot view here.
Very good. So there were some new provisions, and as Congress is wont to do, they modified existing provisions. A lot of these things are fairly minor and technical in nature, and it's good for Minnesota to conform to them, or else people have to be treating things differently for state tax purposes than for federal tax purposes, which quickly becomes a bookkeeping nightmare. So a lot of these modifications to rules relating to different savings plans and such, it's good for us to conform to them, and you may see a very small revenue estimate, but it could have a very real time impact on people who were trying to comply with it if we were not to conform. Then the next chunk of things starting at the bottom of page 3 are things that are extended to tax years 15 and 16. So those, you know, we're going to either be things that the department will adjust administratively for 15, or that people will be able to claim when they file their 16 return, you know, if this bill is is enacted. And then on page 4, there's a long list of items that had previously been extenders, but which PATH made permanent, which is sort of nice from a tax administration perspective, because we won't, all of these things on this permanent list, if this bill is enacted, we won't be coming back to update to these for 1 and 2 years at a time, as Congress had previously been extending them for 1 year or for 2 years. And then we were in a position where we had to take an action, or else we were going to, people would have to add these things back or review their state taxes as though these things hadn't been in effect at the state level. And then the last act is the something that was signed into law in October of last year, which was an exclusion for the value of medals and prize money received by Olympic athletes and Paralympic athletes. And that sort of came to the forefront after the Olympic Games last summer. People became aware that the athletes were required to pay income tax on the value of their medals and prize money. And so this federal law was passed to provide an exclusion for that. And that's the last item. The last page of the summary, several of these are just the date references. There's a clarification on Section 179 expensing that allows heating and air conditioning equipment to be treated as an item of equipment that for which you can claim Section 179. This was a change at the federal level. It's sort of a technical wording change in the way our statute is written. And then there, I guess I should mention, now that I've mentioned Section 179, is that we would continue our treatment of Section 179 expensing and bonus depreciation, where there are additional amounts that allowed at the federal level. At the state level, taxpayers would have to add back 80% of the additional amount they claimed at the federal level in the year that item was placed in service, and then they would subtract that 80% over the next 5 years. So at the end of the six-year period, they would be claiming exactly the same amount at the state level that they claimed at the federal level. It just would be spread over a six-year period rather than all in the first year. So the both of those items are really timing issues. And finally, at the end of the bill, there's a couple of things that are worth noting. There were a couple of federal provisions where the federal laws did some things retroactively, and they extended the filing window for people to file amended returns to pick those items up. And this would allow the same thing at the state level. And these are for people who made retroactive IRA rollovers, who were airline employees, and they were involved in buyouts and such. And the feds keep modifying the rules under which they can make these IRA rollovers, and then they have to let them file amended returns to make it all right. And then also individuals who were wrongfully incarcerated and who received compensation for that, there's a retroactive exclusion in effect for that compensation. And then the final section of the bill is sort of protect us from having any difficulties if there's some unintended and unanticipated consequence that would result in a taxpayer having higher liability in 2015 with enactment of this bill than they reported under the law as it was in effect at the time they paid their 2015 return, commissioner is prohibited from collecting that difference. So we're sort of holding people harmless from having anything that we don't anticipate with regard to conforming to the federal laws for tax year 15.
Ms. Manzi, many of these issues were in the tax bill from last year. Could you, we have some new members here, but could you go over some of the items that were not in the tax bill last year? Because we did federal conforming the tax bill last year, previous members of the committee that are currently on the committee would have worked on those. So are there several items that are new to this conformity that we didn't have in the 16 bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the only item that's in this bill that was not in the tax bill that was passed in 2016 and pocket vetoed by the governor is the exclusion from income for medals and prize money received by Olympians and Paralympians. Everything else in this bill was in whatever it was from tax year 16.
Don't stop believing.
Yes.
I've stopped, by the way. House File 848.
Yep. Thank you.
A bill that will live in infamy.
Yes.
Okay, so with that, Mr. Michael, do you have anything at this point? Are you going to be here for questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just here for questions.
As a resource?
Yeah, I'm as a resource.
Okay, your resource. Okay, I think what we'll do is we'll go on to the department. Generally, for members that are new here, we generally talk, we invite people that want to testify on behalf of the bill, folks that have concerns. Then we always ask the department for their comments on every bill that we have going through here. Sometimes they make comments, sometimes they wave it off. But they will have that opportunity, and we'll have public testimony today included. Hopefully it can be short. Just to see where we're at here, who from the public would like to testify? I think we have Ms. Cadoon from the chamber, CPA. Okay, so we'll want that testimony to be precise and succinct and right to the point, as it always is from those folks. So real quick, I guess, Mr. Michael and Ms. Manzi, well, you can come back here. I do have... maybe the department could come up and make some comments on the bill. Just very, very quickly, okay, so the only item that I see or that you said would be the medal issue and the prize winnings for Paralympians and Olympians. Otherwise, we've seen this if you've been on this committee. I just have two questions. This is probably Mr. Michael. On the last page, item 8, section 8, is that about done yet? Or is this about it for that? I know former Chair Atkins and I worked on that.
Mr. Chairman, one would hope that's about done, that Congress keeps, I think, in response to the fact that some of the, you know, it's largely airline employees, it is airline employees, that some of them have not exercised this option, that Congress then, in the goodness of its heart, gives them more time, and so then we have to give them more time to do these rollovers. But yeah, this all stemmed from the bankruptcy of the airlines in the sort of the aftermath of 9/11 and so forth, and you know, and so yeah, one would hope that we're done with that.
Okay, the other issue, they call it the Dabney provision. It's a very, very important provision that I know Chair Dabney had worked on regarding the exclusion from gross income of discharges of indebtedness on principal residences. That's kind of a big deal.
Yes.
We'll just go on to testimony from the department here. I see that's in here. That's extremely important. And I do appreciate the department's actions on trying to work through these things with these people because, you know, this is something we really need to get into law to help those folks out. So with that, please state your names and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Cynthia Bowerly. I'm the Commissioner in the Department of Revenue.
Welcome, Committee. Why don't we just go down the list, and then we'll start with you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Terry Steenblack, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes at the Department of Revenue.
And I'm Paul Cummings, the Tax Policy Manager.
Welcome to the committee. Before we get going, Chair Detmer has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Ms. Manzi. Was there any provisions in there in terms of the surviving fallen heroes for military surviving spouses?
Ms. Manzi?
I don't think there was in the original bill either.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I believe that law, the don't tax our fallen public safety heroes, was limited to public safety officers.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what all that includes.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, there's a federal, you know, if you're an FBI agent or something like that and you were killed in the line of action, there are survivor benefits, and the IRS ruled years ago that those survivor benefits were exempt from taxation. What this legislation does is say that similar benefits that states provide, and I believe Minnesota, I'm not sure about this, but I think Minnesota does have some of those similar benefits. It gives the same treatment to state benefits that, like, FBI agents and Secret Service agents, survivors got. And so it doesn't apply to you know, military personnel, but it's for police and so forth.
Chair Detmer.
Yeah, I just want to check into that. Maybe we can look into that.
I can see a bill coming.
Yeah.
Thank you. See that into the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chair Detmer. With that, Commissioner Bowerly, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members. Thank you first, Mr. Chairman and committee, for being willing to hear this bill so early in your session. It is really important for Minnesota taxpayers that we are able to move this bill quickly, conform Minnesota law, so that it will make the filing season, which we are starting on January 23rd, much easier for Minnesota taxpayers. So we appreciate the opportunity to share just a little bit of information today. We will be brief, but did want to make sure that you knew sort of the context of this bill. And Mr. Cummings will talk about the context for the bill and why it's so important for Minnesota to conform to what the federal law is doing, and also identify two items that are not yet in this draft, and we do hope we can move quickly to include in this bill as it moves forward. And Ms. Steenblatt is here to help explain how we are going to implement this bill, both in the very few days we have towards filing season for 2016 and then also for 2015. As Ms. Manzi mentioned, this is retroactive to 15. Those taxes are already filed, and the department has a plan to make that as easy as possible on Minnesota taxpayers so that we can do most of that work for them. And Ms. Steenblatt will explain that. You may get questions from some of your constituents, so we want to make sure you have that information, and please feel free to let us know if there's information we can provide to your constituents. As you can imagine, when we take on that those changes to that filing for the previous year, we will have some costs at the department as we move towards that work, and so we would look forward to working with the committee on making sure that we can do that in a timely way, and in order to do that, we will probably need some additional funding to make that happen, so we will continue that conversation. I'll turn it over to Mr. Cummings to talk about the bill a little bit more.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And I just wanted to state, Mr. Chair, that I have not stopped believing. If I might, Mr. Chair, I wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for the continued partnership with you. Despite some differences, you've always been open to receiving feedback from the department, and felt, and though that you have been honest with us and fair, in spite of our disagreements, you've been a good chair to work with. You have a fantastic partisan and nonpartisan staff that has been a pleasure to work with. And, Mr. Chair, if you remember, I was once a staff here at the House, and most of my time here was working for the now DFL lead on taxes, Representative Marquardt. Lots of memories flood back of property tax comment lines and Green Acres and citizen bills. So when you work for someone, you get to know them, and Representative Marquardt is one of the most decent people that I've ever met. The caucus has made a wide choice in selecting Representative Marquardt to be their tax lead. And, Mr. Chair, I also look forward to working with Senators Chamberlain and Rest in the Senate as well. To go back to the bill, Mr. Chair, as Commissioner Bowerly already noted, there are many items in this bill that will help Minnesota businesses and families. 35,000 college students and their families will help pay for their higher education tuition. 70,000 teachers will be eligible for a tax deduction for books and essential classroom materials. Homeowners who refinanced their home or went through a short sale will see a tax cut. 73,000 homeowners who paid mortgage insurance premiums for their qualified residents would see tax breaks. Olympians and Paralympians would have excluded from gross income the value of their Olympic medals, among many other provisions for individuals. Businesses will also see significant reductions and benefits from this bill before the tax year 2016 filing season begins. Some of those provisions include the 15-year straight-line depreciation for qualified leasehold restaurants and retail improvements, 7-year recovery period for certain motorsports, racing track facilities. There's an election to expense mine safety equipment, bonus depreciation over 5 years, permanent increased Section 179 expensing with the 80% add back. There's an exception under Subpart F for active financing income. Generally, the U.S. allows corporations earning money through foreign subsidiaries to delay paying income tax on revenues until they're repatriated. This deferral allows tax corporations with foreign subsidiaries latitude in planning tax affairs. So Congress enacted subpart F to modify the deferral of those taxes on certain businesses performed outside of the U.S. by some U.S. taxpayers. This would provide a permanent exception for certain types of active financing under subpart F. And that's just a sampling of many of the business provisions within this bill. The provisions in this bill as drafted include conformity provisions from five federal laws passed in 2015 and 2016, as stated by Ms. Manzi. Many of the provisions were in one of those bills, which was the PATH Act, or the Protecting Americans from Tax Hikes Act of 2015. After doing one-time extenders year after year, Congress, in their wisdom, worked on a package that would provide longer-term relief. Many of the business items were not just conformed to for tax years 2015 and 2016. They were included for tax years 17, 18, 19, and beyond. Many were made permanent. To achieve a balanced approach and recognize that the long-term nature of the business tax extenders, they also included a provision that reduces the marriage penalty in the working family credit phase out by increasing the income at which the credit begins to phase out for married joint filers by $5,000. Under current law, this enhanced marriage penalty relief would go away, reverting to previous thresholds, effectively raising taxes on those families. What Congress decided to do was to provide long-term tax cuts to both businesses and families. We support conforming to this package as a whole, including the working family credit, as Minnesota has done in the past, including the standard 80% add-back for bonus depreciation 179 expensing that has been typical for many years when we conform to federal changes. This is an example of a provision where we provide conformity with the federal government while having other distinct Minnesota modifications. If I might, Mr. Chair, I wanted to direct your attention to another small item for your consideration, a minor tax filing provision within the Combat Injured Veterans Tax Fairness Act of 2016, which was enacted on December 16th of 2016. This law directs the Department of Defense to, within 1 year, identify severance payments made after January of 1991 to veterans with combat-related injuries and on taxes which were improperly withheld. This law allows affected veterans who improperly included the payments in taxable income an extended time to amend their return to exclude the income. This extended time to amend would not impact us, but we urge the inclusion of this provision. Dr. Wilson has looked at this provision and views this to be a zero cost on the spreadsheet, but additional language will need to be included. Mr. Chair, we appreciate the committee considering this bill so quickly and your ongoing commitment to working on federal conformity with us. We look forward to also continuing a discussion on an approach to pre-conformity that this committee has raised to help provide taxpayers with certainty about tax filing earlier in the process. Thank you for your leadership in putting this together. This bill, including the reduction of the marriage penalty for the working family credit and the filing extension for service members, is a positive step as we head into the tax filing season and this session. Ms. Steenblok will now talk about how this will be implemented and various costs to the department.
Okay, and we will get right to that. I would like to echo your comments on the lead on the tax committee, Representative Marquardt. Your comments were very accurate. Also, Molly, where's Molly? And Molly, you can sit at the table if you'd like.
I know, thank you.
Okay, it's nothing personal. You certainly could come anytime. So I would like to echo those comments. But first, we have to clear up a couple things. I didn't get what your title is in the department.
Mr. Chair, I'm the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Is that like at the level of deputy or assistant?
It's a servant for the people of Minnesota, Mr. Chair, which is something that...
We'll get you to be deputy yet here. Just trust Uncle Greg. Okay. Now, one question I have for Mr. Cummings is, it's the Atwater Cosmos Grove City Falcons, I believe.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
But yes. Were you at Atwater when it was just Atwater?
Oh, no, Mr. Chair.
So you were a Falcon?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I was from Grove City, the home of the Senate former Senate Majority Leader Stanley Holmquist, conservative Senate Majority.
What happened there?
Well, Mr. Senator Holmquist is now passed, but we have a proud history in Grove City of being the Golden Eagles, and then we merged with the with Atwater, Representative Anderson's hometown, to become the Blazers, and now it is Atwater Cosmos Grove City Falcons.
So, were you ever a Blazer?
I was a Blazer, Mr. Chair, but I graduated as a Falcon.
That explains a lot. Okay, please, you've already stated your name. Please proceed, Ms. Steinbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Terry Steenblock, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes at the Department of Revenue. And I'm here today to talk a little bit about how we'll implement federal conformity for tax year 2015 and for tax year 2016. As you all know, the Minnesota individual income tax return begins with the federal taxable income. And when federal law changes are made, the simplest solution for Minnesota taxpayers is for us to conform to those federal law changes. Federal conformity eliminates confusion, additional schedules and forms, and it can provide individual taxpayers with some much-needed tax relief. Our approach for implementing these law changes for 2015 and 2016 will vary depending upon the year. And first, let me talk about tax year 2016. So as Commissioner Bowerly has requested that the action be taken by January 11, 2017, this date ensures that Minnesota taxpayers can file their return with many of the benefits offered at the federal level. If you pass a bill by January 11th, it allows us 7 business days to identify changes to the forms. For example, the removal of the Minnesota nonconformity form known as the M1NC. It gives us the opportunity to adjust pertinent schedules such as the income additions and subtractions known as the M1MA. And some of these forms are necessary only if Minnesota does not conform to the federal law changes. It also gives us the opportunity to notify software vendors, which means we'll quickly notify the vendors that provide the electronic tax software preparation with the changes so that they can update their software, allowing taxpayers to electronically file an accurate and timely tax return. It also gives us the opportunity to make internal system changes so that we can process returns with the conformity changes. Now, what I've described here is very simplistic, and it does not fully represent and reflect the work that goes into getting ready for the filing season. It simply provides you with a few examples of the things that we would need to do to be ready to open. If the bill passed on January 11th, we think we can do all of the things that we need to be ready to open with the IRS and our announced opening date of January 23rd. And there are a lot of valuable reasons as to why we open at the same time as the IRS opens their filing season. Having this in place by the opening date means that taxpayers can file accurate the first time and receive the full refund they're entitled to the first time. We eliminate a large amount of work associated with reviewing and adjusting returns after the filing season. And that's important because reviewing and adjusting returns after the filing season will negatively impact the processing of property tax returns. So now that I've talked briefly about 2016, I want to talk about our plan for tax year 2015. So as you know, tax year 2015 has already passed and taxpayers have already filed their returns. We processed 178,000 2015 tax returns that were affected by the federal conformity provisions. If you pass a bill that reflects full conformity for 2015, our goal is to adjust all of those returns. That means we will do our best at the department to eliminate or reduce the impact to taxpayers by handling the changes within the department. However, there are always rare situations that would prevent us from doing that. And again, I want to reiterate that that would be rare. We will review all the returns affected and one of three scenarios will happen. So we'll adjust the return as appropriate and send out the additional refund amounts to the taxpayer. We will request additional information from the taxpayer, and then upon getting that additional information, we'll adjust the return and send out the additional amount to the taxpayer. Or there may be, again, a very, very rare situation where we'll not be able to adjust the return, and at that point, the taxpayer would have to amend the return. In all of these situations, the taxpayer would receive a letter from us notifying them as to what action was taken, and they would also get their additional refund if that was the appropriate scenario. So I want to talk a little bit about when this work will happen. Our first priority will be to make sure the 2016 forms and system changes are in order to be ready for the filing season open date of January 23rd. Our second priority will be to process the 2016 individual income tax returns and adjust 2015 returns that were affected by the mortgage indebtedness provision that you talked about. And then our third priority will be to review and adjust 2015 tax returns. And we anticipate that this would happen concurrently with the release of the property tax returns and be completed within the calendar year. So I'm going to talk briefly about what this would cost to get the work done. Retroactively making changes does come with a cost, and we need additional resources to review and adjust these returns. We are required to mail notifications to the taxpayers in any situation because the taxpayer has appeal rights. So that requires additional paper, envelopes, and postage. We do want to make sure that we're communicating general direction to the larger population and we're handling additional inquiries from taxpayers. The benefits to this approach is that the department can do much of the work instead of taxpayers, but we will have some additional costs. Consistent with earlier estimates, we expect the administrative costs to do this work will be $1.6 million, with the majority of those costs in FY18. We look forward to discussing this with you in the future, and again, appreciate your leadership on this, Mr. Chair, and I will now stand for questions.
Thank you. So I think at this point we will go for questions. I am watching the clock here because we do have, I think, three people from the public that would like to testify. And so you'll be around till the end of the committee here? Okay, great. Any questions for members at this point for the folks from the Department of Revenue? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just was looking for a little bit of clarification on the House research summary on page 3 at the very top line. It makes real estate investment trusts ineligible to participate in tax-free spinoffs. Could you just clarify that or expand on that a little bit?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hertas, I'd have to look up exactly what the nature of that federal provision is. I believe that under current law, REITs are treated differently than regular corporations with regard to the merger and acquisition reorganization rules, and that this moves them closer. There have been issues in that many of the big multinationals have been spinning their real estate operations off into REITs because that then REITs are pass-through entities and it essentially creates deductions for the rent that wasn't there before. And I don't remember the exact nature of this, but I believe it relates to it. We'll look it up and get back to you about what exactly it is.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I guess I was just concerned that maybe for some reason REITs being used as investments for consumers, that maybe the 1031 exchanges were not going to be permitted under REITs anymore. So I wanted to make sure that was not it.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, for any one of you at the table, there was reference made to the college tuition and other expenses being deductible, and the word family was used. How is family defined for that provision? Because I know that grandparents, for example, and maybe others can set money aside, you know, in college savings plans, but this is, of course, the actual expenditures when they're in college. So I'm curious how a family is defined, if it's the same way it is for those investments or not.
Mr. Cummings?
I think I would, I'll defer to Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi, but I'm believing that it's within the tax return. But I'll defer to Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Michael? Or Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the higher education tuition deduction applies to tuition paid by an individual for his or her own college education. So if you or I were taking classes and eligible for this, we would be able to deduct it, or the amounts that you pay for your dependent. So it's not like the Section 529 plan where grandparents, aunts, and uncles, and so forth can make contributions. It's just if you pay for something for your dependent.
So basically, Mr. Chairman, the definition then is parents. If parents, if it's a traditional college student, let's say typically 18 to 24, and parents are either paying for or providing some of the costs, the parents could deduct it. Otherwise, the individual student could deduct it, but that's the definition of family then, basically, is what you're saying.
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, yes, that's how this deduction works. Now, of course, within a family, you know, a grandparent might make a gift of money to a parent to pay the tuition for the student, and the parent could then deduct, you know, the amount that they paid after having received the gift, and they can all work that out amongst themselves. But as far as the tax return reporting, the grandparent would not be deducting items paid for the student unless the student was actually eligible to be claimed as a dependent of the grandparent, which would be unusual, but which might happen in some.
So that's interesting. You could gift it. A grandparent could gift it to the parent, and then the parent pay for it, and then it would be deducted. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions for the department? Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, Commissioner, and to for your testimony, all of you. Just a couple of questions. You mentioned the cost to the agency of informing taxpayers, and obviously the conformity. We're looking at both for the tax filing year, which will start soon, as well as last year, which was not done. I'm just wondering if you know specifically for the 2015 filing year, if you know how many taxpayers in Minnesota are affected by, you know, these provisions not being done until this year, and really specifically along with that on the mortgage indebtedness provision, because that can run taxpayers several thousands of dollars. Were those taxpayers required to pay to Minnesota and now waiting for their refund?
Commissioner Bowerly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, thank you. We have identified approximately 178,000 Minnesotans who were affected by these retroactive changes for 2015. We believe about 8,000 folks who are affected by the mortgage indebtedness. Because Minnesota law was not updated through last year for the filing season, that they do owe that amount under current law. And we have been working with anyone who needed to pay that amount. We can set, for any taxpayer, we can, for example, set up a payment plan. And if you conform the law, if we conform in Minnesota to 2015, we will work to get any money that they have paid that they now no longer owe back to them as quickly as possible. And as Ms. Steenblatt said, we will prioritize those returns and making those adjustments because of the large amount that might be due for that situation. It would affect their 2016 taxes as well. So we will work to make sure that we can work with those folks and minimize any disruption that we can for them.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. So if we are able to take rapid action and get everything done by in place by the 23rd to align with the federal, will that help to ensure that those people get rapid action? And will they get any kind of interest back as well or not from the 2015 amount?
Ms. Steinbach?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if they were entitled to interest, if they made payments and they were entitled to it, they would receive interest payments back, yes.
Chair Loon.
Thank you. One last question.
I had been contacted by a number of constituents this year, a higher number than usual on property tax refunds. And just wondering if you had mentioned in your testimony that part of delay perhaps in some of those processing had something to do with the conformity issues. I just wondered if you could comment more on that, because I did actually have a constituent who reported to me they had talked to someone at Revenue, mm-hmm. and was given an explanation that it was a lack of resources somehow or staff manpower or something in taking a pretty long time to process those. So I wondered if you could comment on that.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Loon, to give you some sort of broad overview, we have processed about 98% of the property tax refunds that were filed for last year. That's approximately 804,000 returns, and that is significantly up, about 25,000 more than we've been receiving in the last year. As I shared with the committee last year, we are seeing a significant increase in identity theft and tax refund fraud related to identity theft. That is true in the individual income tax filing and in property tax filing, because whenever there's a refund, it is an attraction for criminals who have been stealing identities. And so as we have shared with both this committee and with the finance committees, we need additional resources to continue to put effort in making sure that we are identifying the folks who are coming in fraudulently and not punishing those innocent Minnesota taxpayers who are just looking for their refunds on a timely basis. So we are continuing to reallocate resources within the department. We want to continue to talk with all of you about that. I will note that, as Ms. Steenblack said, we would anticipate and we would hope that we could start working on 2015, making those adjustments for folks starting right after this filing season. And we could do that concurrently with the property tax season if we have additional resources. If we don't have additional resources, we simply cannot continue to do both of those things for Minnesotans. So we want to continue the conversation about how to get those refunds from 2015 out in a timely way. So we share the concern. We are continuing to assess. We are putting with the help of additional appropriation last year for a piece of new technology from the legislature that we greatly appreciated. And Chair Anderson, we have greatly appreciated your help in making sure that we could tackle this important issue. We hope to be able to move those refunds much more quickly this year. It is a changing environment, as all of you know, in the environment. There's a lot of identity theft. I'm not going to suggest that the Russians were the ones doing it, but there's a lot of information in our public space about all of the security issues around that. We want to protect people's tax information. We want to protect the state general fund, and we want to get Minnesotans their refunds as quickly as possible. That's a balancing act for us, and we every day continue to work on how to do that best for Minnesotans.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that, and certainly we all want to make sure that we're clamping down on theft, but obviously for those taxpayers who have been filing for those refunds and for some reason it's taking a long time this year, we're all getting those calls. So I would just hope that we can continue to move through this as expeditiously as possible. So thank you.
Okay, other questions for the department? If not, we will move on with the testimony. The first on my list is, and if you can stick around, department, there may be as a resource here, Ms. Cadoon from the chamber. What, any of the folks want to come down? Why don't you come down? We've got the realtor, CPAs, chamber. Anybody else? Is there anybody wishes to testify against my bill? Okay. So I think this is it for testimony. We'll take some brief testimony, and then we have caucuses and things that we're going to be going to here. So please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 2,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today on federal conformity. I just want to make two main points. One is we are in strong support of federal conformity. Obviously, our tax system is tied very closely to the federal definitions, and the cost of conformance can be very complicated. And so as much as we can conform to the federal code, that obviously eases the cost and complexity of conformance with our tax code, and that's very important. The second main point I want to make is dealing with provisions that are really encouraging investment by businesses in their operations, and that really is on Section 179 and bonus depreciation. This bill does not fully conform to those federal provisions. We think we really strongly encourage you to look at that and see if there's opportunities to do more conformance in this area. I'll specifically talk about Section 179, which is really targeted to small businesses. This is something that Minnesota had typically conformed to in the past and has always had strong bipartisan support. We stopped conforming when Minnesota was in budget deficits, and that was something the business community certainly understood. Those were tough decisions, and we couldn't do as much as we liked. We are no longer in budget deficits. This is a provision that the federal code has now made permanent, and we think there's a good opportunity and strong reasons policy-wise. We want to make sure we can encourage investment in the state of Minnesota, that we can reduce the cost investing in Minnesota operations. Section 179 is an important provision because it does allow businesses to immediately expense that provision versus what we're doing now with that five-year add-back. As Nina Manzi mentioned, it is a timing issue, right? You do recoup that over the 6 years. 5 years, you'd be able to get that back with a tax reduction. But if you look at, like, the revenue estimate, which is on page 7, you can see for bonus depreciation in Section 179, it really will actually increase taxes on businesses over the first 3 years. A dollar is worth more now than it would be 5 years later. That will help encourage investment. Most other states, in the information I have, has conformed to the Section 179, so we hope you can take a look at this. Bonus depreciation has not been made permanent, and my research shows that not as many states have conformed to this, something that certainly would be valuable to do so, but we can understand if there's a priority, we would encourage you to look at Section 179.
Okay, thank you, and I believe for members that Section 179, which I would love to fully conform with, cost me about $150 million. Ms. Cadoon?
Mr. Chair.
Am I off?
Once again, the last estimate I saw, you no doubt have more current information, but it is a timing issue, so it would be about probably about $120 million or so in the first year or two, and then it's much less in the tails.
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and we've discussed this in previous committees, but as you know, the state of Minnesota may not be able to afford that, but I know that you personally could. So,
per month? Okay, next, please. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gino Fragnito, and I represent the Minnesota CPA Society. We're a professional association of approximately 9,000 certified public accountants across Minnesota. And we thank you and the committee for taking the time to address this early and provide some certainty for planning purposes as my members come into the 2016 preparation season. Early is always better, and the late conformity bills that have passed in recent years have caused some consternation, some frustration, and some angst among members. Some even in the context of 30 plus years said it was their worst ever. So the fact that we can do this early and get it along and move it down the road is beneficial. I won't talk about the Section 179. Ms. Cadoon did a good job, but we certainly are in support of full conformity with that. And would again, thank you for moving this quickly and expeditiously.
Thank you, Mr. Fragnito. And just so you know, your members will make less money because it'll be much easier to file taxes.
Mr. Chairman, we're happy when our clients are happy.
There you go. There you go. Next, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Paul Eiger. I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill today, and thank you for taking up this issue as early as you are. I'll be very brief. There have been comments about the mortgage debt cancellation tax relief provision that's in the federal conformity bill. That's a very important provision. Appreciate the fact that Representative Loon asked the question about how many taxpayers were affected in past years. As you can see, the numbers are fairly large, but if you even think about it on an individual level, These are taxpayers that experienced an economic loss, and there's been a lot of support around this table on both sides of the aisle for not taxing people on phantom income that they never received, which is exactly what this provision is. And so we look forward to seeing a federal conformity bill, this bill pass early in this session, and we look forward to having a conversation with you, Mr. Chair, and members of the legislature about these home ownership provisions and maybe some other thoughts about how Minnesota could be a leader in ensuring that people that go through a short sale, a distress sale, aren't taxed by the state of Minnesota, regardless of what the federal government does with the federal update. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Eggers. And before we go on, I want to correct for the record, or I want to clear up for the record. I call that very important provision a Davenny bill, but was that a Davenny amendment, or do you have it as a bill also? Chair Davenny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it was a Davenny conversation.
Okay, so for the record, it's a Davenny conversation.
Thank you, Mr.
A very
Chair.
Good one, I might
Much
add.
Much appreciated.
A very good one, I might add. Okay, questions for Mr. Egger or Fragnito or Cadoon? Okay, with that, we have heard the bill as it will be introduced today. Anything else? Anyone else wish to testify for or against? Chair Marker.
So, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I first of all want to congratulate you on your chairmanship.
Thank
Representative
you.
Davidson, it's an honor to serve with you in this committee and as the DFL lead. And if this is a sign of things to come, we are in good hands for the session and the year, and that's very good. And I'd also like to thank Mr. Cummings for his very generous comments, and also Commissioner Bowerly and the Department of Revenue for all the work that you have done in trying to kind of put this all together. It seems like, you know, this has been a tradition in the House, is this federal conformity. It's always been bipartisan. It's something we've always tried to do, and we've always kind of had to bring the Senate along over the years, if my history is correct. And so we've been a leader on this. But thank you so much, Chair Davids, for bringing this forward so quickly. And Ms. Templin had done some research, and in the last 10 years, I think the quickest it's been presented to the governor, this federal conformity, is January 9th. So if we could get this done in the next few days, we'd at least have the quickest time of getting this to the governor in at least the last 10, 12 years or so.
Good. But we should name this the Jimmy John's.
We could, yeah. We could be, yes. So, but this is excellent. It will provide some very valuable property tax relief quickly and simplify things for a lot of taxpayers around the state. And so I'm looking forward to working with you in this committee this year. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chair Marquardt. And This is a bill that makes everybody's lives a lot easier. I think it makes the department's lives easier, and when we do that, we make Minnesotans' lives easier. Not that life is always easy, but when it comes to filing taxes, anything we can do in this regard, I think, is very important. Before we close, I did have one question for Mr. Cummings. Were you an eagle, a blazer, and a falcon, all three? I know you were a blazer and a falcon. Were you an eagle at any one time?
No.
Because you may have set a world record being three team names and never moving.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was not an eagle, a blazer, and a falcon. I was just a blazer and a falcon. But I was a paper boy for the Minneapolis Star and Tribune, and I did deliver papers every morning to the Golden Eagle Cafe.
But see, I stayed at Holiday Inn Express, so you got it.
Oh, yeah. So they at the Golden Eagle Cafe, they had the best cheesy toast, where they put a Velveeta cheese on toast, and you know, as a 14-year-old, it was amazing in the morning. But
now we know.
Now we know.
Now we know. With that, unless there's any other comments or questions, and thank you, Chair Marquardt, for that. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.